Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ty Law on a Ty Tuesday brought to you by Corvus Vodka, the official vodka of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. By Apex Entertainment. Visit 100,000 square feet of pure fun at Apex in Marlboro. And by 110 Grill. Visit one of the 34 locations throughout New England for modern American cuisine in a trendy, casual atmosphere. And speaking of trendy and speaking of casual, here is the great Ty Law. Good morning, Ty.
Good morning, guys. Good morning. It's, hey, great, great day today. Ty Tuesday is great. We all positivity. We got to talk about some of the BS, though, but it's all positive today, man. That was a great win.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's get to the positive. We'll save the BS for later. But, I mean, that is – it's being called a signature win. It's got Wiggy declaring that they're going to win the division. It's got Scheim declaring that Drake May is going to be the MVP. So should we pump the brakes a little bit, or is this a huge signature win for the football team?
No, that is a huge, huge win, Greg. Guys, I can say this. Drake May, he keep playing like that. I don't know. I'm going to slow down on MVP, but he going to the Pro Bowl. He keep doing that. We got us a Pro Bowl quarterback on our hands, everybody. So, I mean, I'm so excited about what they're doing and how they pulled that off. Like I said last week, you got to go out there and beat the team. You know, they're the team that everyone was talking about, so they put on a masterful performance as far as a good team win. But Drake May, man, I ain't getting tired of saying it. That's the real deal right there, man. We got us a damn quarterback.
Yeah.
And next 15 years, as long as he stay healthy, 15 years, we got us one.
And the reason why, Ty, the reason why I say I like their chances in potentially winning the division and is because when you look at their schedule, they only have really 2.5 hard games. They got at the Bucs and then the Bills again at home. And I throw the Ravens in there, but I don't know what the Ravens are going to be because of the injury on defense with all those guys and Lamar. So when you look at that, even if you want to say they got 3 really hard games left,
that's it.
That's all they got left.
I agree. Like the Ravens, they ain't looking about nothing right now. So, I mean, I can see the Patriots, they can sneak up in there. I don't think they're going to sneak up. They're going to kick the door down, and they're going to make the playoffs. You know, if they can pull it off again, especially they get them at home now to get Buffalo later in the season. Hey, they could win this division. I'm excited for them. They got to fix that defense now. I mean, we going to stay positive. I'm going to try to stay positive. But they need to fix some stuff on defense, man. Every time, I don't know why, Wiggy, that they do not get up in guys' face and challenge them and play tight coverage. And when they did play tight coverage, that's when they got the interception. You know what I mean? I was watching them. So I'm like, they need to just, you know, trust themselves, trust the defense, and just play man to man. Playing so damn soft. I can't stand when I see corners playing so soft. It really makes my blood boil, guys, so I apologize.
But, Ty, how do you make sure if you're Mike Vrabel or the leaders in that locker room that you don't get so high off this win that you now look at a Saints team that you should beat and maybe play down to them? I think that's been a problem with this Patriots franchise for the last couple of years where they play down to opponents that they're better than.
I don't think Mike Vrabel's going to let that happen because he's going to bring you back to reality when you go in there because everybody's riding high right now. But I guarantee you the low lights is coming. They're going to have the low lights and he's going to put it on there. So don't get too up. Let's enjoy the win. but he's going to show some plays that they should have got back, and he's going to put you on blast in front of everybody. So it was not a perfect game, but I want to send a shout-out to Stephon Diggs, too. That's how you play when you play your former team, man. And I told you, Wiggy, he's getting his swag back. Yeah, I told you. I mean, you might not necessarily need that number one guy that you think you need, because Stephon, he's getting that swag back right now, and I love the way he played.
If he can play like that all year, you know, I mean, he might not be the dynamic number one, but he's a legit number one if he can continue that.
Absolutely, and the way that Drake is playing and he's spreading that ball around like that, I mean, even when we say Tom Brady-esque, and we said it, guess what? On the stat sheet, no touchdowns, no interceptions, but the toughness that he displayed when he was, because he was getting hit, I love how he gets up just like Tom. He gets right up. He don't get up slow. He just get up right up like ain't nothing happened, man. I love what I see from this kid.
Another fumble from Ramondre Stevenson, and then you've got Antonio Gibson out for the season with the ACL. What do you do there?
That's where I was coming with the bull crap. So, yes, Ramondre Stevenson, yeah, you got two touchdowns, man, but you got to stop. You got to stop turning the ball over. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. You know what I mean? For him to go back in and give you the ball because someone else was down. But, I mean, you don't want to lose trust in the locker room, and you're on your way if you haven't already lost that trust, especially with the offensive coordinator and head coach. But they're going to have to go out there and get another running back, because I don't know if we can trust him. You know, because this is not a this year problem. This has been a problem for a couple of years with him. And I love the way he plays, but right there, you lose value, you know, when you get the ball back.
Ty, what do you think it is with Vrabel? Like, and I kind of asked him this question because you know how it was when we played with Bill, like, you do that, you're going straight to the gulag, in the hole, we might not see you for the rest of the season. But Mike has done a good job of giving guys a little bit longer leash. And I asked him, is that because he's a former player and he kind of understands the difficulty and what comes with playing the game?
I think that, yes. As a former player, because, you know, you expect so much, you know, out of yourself. And when you have a coach that hasn't played, because I've had to tell a coach, Bill, before, it's like, hey, have you ever covered Randy Moss? Do you know what you're asking? You know what I mean? You know, on certain situations, on this technique. So sometimes, you know, when you get a coach who's never played at this level, he is just a coach. I don't care what you've seen before, but Mike Vrabel being a player, he knows what Ramondre might be feeling. So he's trying to give him, another chance. You know what I mean? You got to redeem yourself. But at the same time, you can't hurt the football team. So you have a player's coach who's been a player at that level. He's fought hard to get where he's at, you know, as a player and as a coach. So, yes, Ramondre, he better be happy that he doesn't have Bill Belichick, I tell you that, because he wouldn't be seeing the field like this and getting other opportunities. So I give all the credit to Mike Vrabel for sticking with him and giving him an opportunity to try to get his confidence back.
Ty, Mahomes and the Chiefs 2-3, rough start to the season. Do you think that this is the year the end is coming for their brief little dynasty here?
Absolutely. I don't think that they're not looking for anything to change. It's still early in the season, and we can't forget that that is Patrick Mahomes over there, and he shows some signs that he still got it. You know, I think, you know, Travis Kelce, he's getting a little bit longer in the tooth, but he's still, you know, productive. But it just isn't the same spark that it used to be. Defensively, they're not as strong. So I think that they're on the downside. If they can pull it off, this will definitely be their last time. But I can't see the way they're playing right now, and the teams that are getting better, I can't see anyone fearing Kansas City at this point. They struck fear in people before they stepped on the field. You can see that teams are not afraid of them anymore. They're not a worry about the big names, the Kelces, the Patrick Mahomes. They're not worried about that. So I think this is the end for the Kansas City Chiefs.
We were talking earlier about A.J. Brown being unhappy in Philadelphia, and you're a guy who, from time to time, may have attempted a public negotiation, a renegotiation or two. Is what does a guy Does bringing a guy to a team like this worry you at all, or do you feel like Wiggy was saying earlier, change the scenery and guys are completely different, and Steph Diggs is an example of that?
Absolutely. Bringing, if you can get A.J. Brown and pair him with Stephon Diggs, bring him. And then, you know, A.J. Brown knows what he's doing. He know he just got that new contract guaranteed a lot of money, and if you look at it, it's like, hey, every receiver wants the ball, so he's not doing anything that no other receiver would do in the same position. You know, I mean, Keyshawn wrote a damn book about it. Come on, throw me the damn ball. Now, that's going public. You know, he's trying to write a bestseller about it, but that's just the receiver position, and he wants to feel a part of the game. So if he's not, he's going to say something about it. Hell, he got enough, like I said, he got enough guaranteed contract that he can say what he want to say, and they just going to have to deal with it.
Ty,
and I got one question for you guys, too, because, I mean, I just want to throw this out there. Who in the hell is the guy that is in charge of the game clock? Because, you know, when they left 1 second on there, somebody need to call that out. You going to tell me you going to push the button right at 1 second to stop the clock instead of just, well, nobody even missed that. And you gave an opportunity for us to score. So shout out to the guy in Buffalo who run the score clock. You know, and left 1 second on there. We appreciate you, man, whoever you are, man. From all Patriots fans everywhere, we appreciate you. But I know, don't take your ass outside in Buffalo, because that was just dumb.
That Hunter Henry should have, like, that was on him, I thought, in that play where he waited to turn around. You had to know there was only 4 seconds, because Drake threw it right away.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. I was shocked there was still a second on the clock when they let them kick the field goal. But Hunter Henry played
no matter what happened on that. No matter what happened on that play, the guy who pushed the damn button.
Right.
You didn't even have to push the button to say 1 second. Just let it go. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Because I didn't understand that one.
Yeah.
Time for the most entertaining play of the game, which is brought to you by Apex Entertainment. Visit 100,000 square feet of pure fun at Apex in Marlboro. What do we want to have in the running here?
So I think Ty brought up earlier the Marcus Jones interception should be up there. I think that absolute laser beam to Stephon Diggs on the rollout.
The Steph Diggs rollout. Yeah. That pass was, and he waited for him, and he was under pressure. Yep. That to me was the play of the game. But you're right about the interception.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that one, Greg. And you can see that, like, the veteran, you know, player that he is. So, you know what? Get open and get downfield. You know, and the way he toe-tapped a couple catches out there, man. Stephon was on fire. I mean, 10 catches, man. Hey, that he's going to be great, you know, for Drake May. He is going to be great for him to have that veteran there. So, again, Wiggy, if they get another wide receiver to pair with that, man, they Patriots, man, we got a chance. Anything happening in the new season, in the playoffs, you never know how deep they can go.
Right.
I want to
stay healthy.
Since Wiggy and Chime have already booked the duck boats, I want to get you on record here. So, on October 7th or whatever it is today, do they win the division? Yes or no, Ty Law?
Yes. I'm going yes. I say they can win the division, because, I mean, think about it. The Jets. Nothing. Stink. Only thing they have to worry about is Buffalo. So now they, you know, they feel confident they can go out there and beat them. You know, of course, they're going to get better as well. I mean, who else? It's no one to worry about but Buffalo in the division.
Yeah. The Jets stink. Miami stinks.
Okay. And is Drake May the MVP?
Of the season, for the whole NFL?
Yeah, that's what Chime said in his lead this morning.
I said he can be. The way he's playing, and normally, especially recently, it just goes to the best quarterback on the best team, and your schedule stinks. If you win the most games and win your division, there's a chance he is an MVP candidate.
Right, yeah, I mean, I think he might be in the conversation, but no, because even with a great performance like this, they're still going to look at the stats. You know, even with this great win, zero touchdowns. At the end of the day, they're going to look at those type of things too. And then when you have another team that's going to be in the playoffs, and you look at Josh Allen and you look at some of the other quarterbacks, they're going to have the numbers as well. It's not just about wins and losses when it comes to quarterbacks. It's the numbers. And sometimes we get caught up into the stats. So I just don't know if his stats you know, are going to be like if he doesn't score more touchdowns. You
but
know
then
what I mean?
Again,
but
last
I
year,
agree that
Lamar
he's going to be in the conversation.
Last year, Lamar had way better stats than Josh Allen. Josh Allen was still your MVP because he had more wins.
Look at how he was playing, though. Like I said, it's not all about stats. It's everything in totality. But you still got to have stats to back it up. I don't know how his stats are going to be at the end of the day because he spreads the ball around. But you still got to put touchdowns out there. You got to do that. You know, decrease interceptions. He doesn't have a lot of interceptions, but you have to have touches. I would love to see him get MVP. I would absolutely love it. But I just think it's a little too soon to start talking MVP. I can say Pro Bowl. I'm very confident in saying that we have us a Pro Bowl quarterback in New England. And, you know, Tom is gone, so we have something to look forward to in the future, and we got our guy.
That is this week's Drake Take from Ty Law, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. All right, Ty Law. Well, it's exciting. I mean, that is undeniably a big win. There continue to be the naysayers who tell me the Bills just blew this one, and everybody has an off week, and that's all it was. So we shouldn't get too excited about it.
No, the Pats.
Yeah, well, we deserve to get excited around here. Like I'm excited. Look, I'm on the West Coast. It's 5:30 in the morning now here, right? I'm excited. I'm ready to go work out or something. The Patriots. Hey, I'm looking forward to this. I can't wait to get back there to tailgate. It makes it more fun for everybody. I'm tired of talking about what they should have done, what they could have done, and reminiscing about the old days. Damn it, we can talk about the Patriots right now. Mike Vrabel, we gotta give them their flowers. Now, we gonna bust them down if they don't play well, but we got to give them their flowers today.
All right, Ty Law, it is always a pleasure. Great to hear your voice. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Later.
Expectations now changing for everybody?
They could, and they almost should, in a vacuum, be 10-3. By the time they get to their bye. The only team they should lose to on paper in a vacuum is Tampa. They should be able to beat Atlanta at home. They should be able to take care of business against all those other teams, the Giants, the Titans, the Browns, Jets. So I do think that the AFC landscape has drastically changed.
Are you serious right now?
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
It is Wednesday here on WEEI Afternoons, and we're well aware the hype train didn't slow down between Tuesday and Wednesday. The Patriots hype train is headed to Nollins, and I'll give you my personal example of the hype. Someone in my world texted me, I think I should put a grand on the Pats to lay 3.5. And I was like,
what?
Are you out of your mind?
Wow, nice to know you're still talking with your son every day.
Are you out of your mind, bro?
Where's he getting that? Yeah, what? Jackson tapped into the family reserves now already?
Yeah, the NIL money's coming in.
But I will say, Tom Curran, who'll join us tomorrow at 3:30, is a week removed from Drake May. There's a dark side. There's a dumbness to his game.
I like that headline.
I still think, I liked it for a little while, I still think that there's some dumbness to this team. I'm sorry.
Where's the dumb?
I don't know. You had two defensive linemen with 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct
penalties. But they were, hold on.
That's dumb.
I'm going to cut them a little bit of slack.
Why?
Because.
What are you, Vrabel?
Don't worry.
Yes, yeah, you can commit all the penalties you want here in playtime. It's okay.
Penalties don't correlate to winning and losing.
Gridiron romper room. Well, they're geeked up. It's Sunday Night Football. You're in hell's mouth out in Buffalo. You're trying too hard. They'll dial it back.
Okay, how about when you want to go jumbo package to pick up a short yardage play and the jumbo you brought in can't stay on side for the
snap?
Which
jumbo
count?
Was that?
That was Vidarian Lowe.
Oh, with Vidarian Lowe, you know.
Is he still on the roster?
Is he?
He is.
Oh, okay.
Yes, right. Dan Ball?
What if you have a running back who's overly generous and likes to give the ball to the other team more than keep it for himself?
Great example. Mm-hmm. He fumbled again, and the coach is like, don't worry about it. There's nothing that correlates fumbling to winning.
Listen, we signed a practice squad running back from Atlanta. Our fumbling problems are over. Rearview kid.
Jashawn or whatever?
Yeah.
I don't even know his last name. Jashawn is all. Yep. Corbin. Jashawn Corbin. Signed to the practice
squad. Sounds like a name from Arrested Development.
So I get why people like what they see from the Patriots. I get it. They played really well against a bad team, and then they followed it up by playing really well against a good team. Mm-hmm. They've won two in a row. They've won three overall, which in New England, based on recent years, you're almost matching your season total. Remember?
One more win.
Actually, no, you matched last year's because you were a three-win football team. You take out that debacle. Yeah.
You won three on purpose last year. You won three on purpose so far this season. So far, if Mike Vrabel wanted to retire right now, he could say, I did what Gerard Mayo did, but in only 5 weeks' time.
He's a little young to retire. Although he did play, he's probably got good bank.
But you know what? If you've got enough money, you go on those Viking River cruises where they serve you wine in your room, and you go traveling.
Or maybe just put $1 million on the Patriots to cover the three and a half in New Orleans and then call it a career.
This just in, teaser to the three-point stance, I'm not so sure I'd be putting that 3.5 down.
Oh, negative Fitzy. He likes the Bills. Fitzy, he likes the Yankees.
Hater.
Does he like the Saints?
The hater.
Spencer Rattler. But it's the Patriots are playing well, and then we get the fortuitous stretch of the schedule, which the whole damn schedule is basically fortuitous, except for the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, they've got like a tough game left.
They really do. The Ravens.
The Ravens.
And the Bills. I mean, just because it's at home, we're not penciling that in as a victory. I would actually pencil that in as a potential ass-whooping when Josh Allen goes, remember that last game?
Ass-whooping? I think this team at this point now is ass-whoop preventable. I think they are immune to ass-whoopery.
Boy. So Tom Curran's telling me they're going to be 10-3 at their bye. You're telling me they're, what is the word?
Ass-whoop immune.
Ass-whoop immune.
A-W-I.
And I get it. We look at the schedule. The 1-4 Saints on the horizon. Then the 1-4 Titans.
Dub.
Then the 1-4 Browns.
Mind you, the Titans.
Tell me if you see a trend. The Titans have
a win because of the stupidest play of the year, if not the last 5 years, by Arizona's running back and literally the craziest touchdown I've ever seen in football.
And then it jumps up from 1-4 to 2-2 for the Falcons, a team that got blown out by the Panthers, the team you blew out a week later.
And then came back and knocked down the Commanders.
And then you have a real game against Tampa Bay, but then it's the Jets at 0-5.
See, yeah, there's three potential L's right there.
Jets at 0-5 on Thursday Night Football. Could that AKA be Aaron Glenn's last game? They got the long week after that. Did they can his ass?
No, he makes the season.
Rich Kotite's like, please become the worst coach in the history.
Al Groh's like, wow, even I knew when to pull out of this.
And the Bengals, 2-3. Normally you'd be like, oh, the Bengals, tough game.
Big heave-ho Joe and the Bengals.
Joe Flacco, maybe.
Side note, do we think Joe Flacco, because Jake Browning's been very disappointing this season. 2 years ago.
He's proving my point. Everybody thought he was a good backup quarterback.
There's no such thing. He was sneaky. No.
Good backup quarterbacks get exposed about hypothesis. Two games in.
No, Jake Browning was excellent a couple years ago.
For how long?
Longer than two games.
You sure about that?
Yep.
You sure about that?
I'm sure about it. Pretty sure.
Check it.
Yep, I will. I'll fact check.
Everybody liked him because his wife wore a one-piece skin-tight cat suit thing.
That was part of the equation. I'm not going to lie. And you can't take your eyes off his girlfriend.
That was true.
Yeah.
Will Fleming's like, yeah, that was true.
Yeah, no, completely honest. But he's been a massive disappointment, and the Bengals have lost three in a row. They had to make the move. From what I read this morning on ESPN, they tried desperately to get Kirk Cousins. They tried to get a bunch of different backups. None were available. They even tried to get Famous Jameis, which would have been... Jamar Chase and Famous Jameis on the same team would have been a show.
Now, that game signed me up for because I'm thinking 45-42, whoever wins. Because you're going to be in a shootout with Jameis, but he's going to give you defensive scores.
That's where you tell the friend of yours that said, oh, should I bet $1,000 on the Pats? You say, no. You bet $5,000 on the over.
Pound the over. Speaking of the over real quick... This is the saddest text I believe we've ever heard. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dan Ball. The 959 says, wait, we heard Hart and Fitzy were killed in a car accident. They are still alive? Very sad to hear. That might be the meanest text ever.
What?
That's hurtful.
Where?
Who's spreading rumors that we were dead?
Who writes that kind of crap?
And why would we be in the same car?
Honestly, who starts their day by saying, you know what I need to do? I need to write a fake death text about some radio host.
And about us. Like, if you're going to do it, make it somebody a little bit more notable. No, I mean, we are who we are.
Right.
Like, maybe do, like, Stern.
Oh, man. But you know what it is?
Don Imus. Is he still with us?
Buffalo.
Or is he already gone?
Imus?
Yeah.
Or 7FAR, Don Imus here.
He's already gone? You could. It'd be true.
All right, man. I won't be joining you for dinner. I'm dead.
Getting back to the Patriots. Everybody is now penciling in playoffs. I did the poll yesterday. It was well over 80% of Patriots fans now, and I use this word intentionally because words have meaning, expect the Patriots to make the playoffs. Expect. We are 2 weeks removed from a loss to the Steelers in which you, and you accurately described it, turned it over six times because it ended on downs. That's a sixth turnover. Turnover on downs is literally how
one
they
more
call
it.
It
would have been seven.
So 2 weeks removed from that, and one of the wins was a blowout of Bryce Young, who looked like he didn't want to play for the Panthers anymore late in that game.
Except then the next week, he and Rico Dowdle came back, and they were down, what was it, 17-0, 17-3? 21-0 against the Dolphins and, like, found their mojo all over again.
But that's irrelevant. It's a bad football team with a bad quarterback. He's been benched previously in his career. So you get one win in Buffalo, and I don't want to alarm you people.
Yep, here we go.
But you people always tell me
2-12.
Every year the Patriots find a way to steal a game from the Bills, correct?
They kind of seem to, yes.
Okay.
Whether it's
does
whether
that devalue this win?
Whether it's a three-pass affair in Buffalo in 2021, the game in 2023 where Josh Allen played like crap. Last year, of course, the let's blow the first overall pick game. All of those.
So you beat the Bills. You people tell me you always beat the Bills.
Well, see, here's the thing. This is my big question based off of something you said on Monday. We never really got to it yesterday. How much of Sunday's surprise win or like upset? You can't not call it an upset if you're an 8.5-point dog on the road. How much of that upset was on the Patriots' effort and how much of it was because Buffalo didn't play to their best?
I give most of it to the Patriots' effort. I don't think the Bills played terribly. Obviously, the turnovers, big factor.
Yeah,
turnovers were key.
I'm 70-30, 75-25.
I think the Patriots went into Buffalo and beat the Bills. I just don't know if the Bills and Sean McDermott, we played the audio from last Wednesday. He was trying to cull up competitive nature in his team. He was trying to get his team to avoid a letdown, to avoid looking past the Patriots and say, no, the Patriots and Drake May got something going. And he couldn't do it because the Patriots had more energy. Stephon Diggs had more energy. There was more competitive fight, compete level. It's hockey season, so we can bring compete level to the conversation here for the Patriots. There was more compete level for the Patriots than there was for the Bills on Sunday night.
I have some good news for you regarding Steph Diggs and their mindset towards Sunday. We have some fresh audio from the Patriots locker room, courtesy of our pal Megan Ottolini, where Steph Diggs addresses that same notion of gearing up for Buffalo and then actually needing to realize how important it is to bring that same level of energy, that same level of compete, that same level of preparation for New Orleans. We have, like, it's being
effort. Oh, you're not setting it up. I thought you were setting it up there.
I was trying to
stretch. I had no idea what you were
doing. I was trying to stretch for time. I was just, come on, vamp a little longer. It might almost be there.
So we'll have that.
We'll have that soon.
Steph Diggs audio from Gillette talking about a Patriots letdown. Is there a potential for a letdown this week in New Orleans, or is this just hit the accelerator and beat the teams you are supposed to beat? Are the Patriots good enough, and are they trustworthy enough to say, oh, you're supposed to beat that team, you're supposed to beat that team, you're supposed to beat that team, and can they go on a run here to, again, Tom Curran said 10-3 at your bye week. 10-3, talk of not just the town, NFL, double-digit wins. Are you recalculating your win total for the season? I think we're going to do that a little bit later.
We're doing that already? Five weeks in?
Well, throughout the offseason, we recalculated downward most times. We reacted to joint practices and preseason games and all of that. Are we recalculating upward? Because you know who did? Las Vegas. The win total for your New England Patriots is now 9.5.
Come on.
So if you want the over, you got to take the Tom Curran-esque 10 wins or the Brian Hoyer-esque high range, 10 or 11 wins.
So just to follow this, they opened at 7.5, went to 8.5, then after week one went down to 7.5.
Correct.
And now after four weeks later and two straight wins, one against a bad team, one against a good team, they're up to 9.5.
But I will say, I think Vegas is also probably calculating in what I just read. 1-4, 1-4, 1-4, 0-5. The team's on
the
schedule.
They do all the numbers.
The schedule is weak. We knew it was weak coming into the season. It's probably weaker than it was because the Ravens aren't as good and the Bengals don't have a quarterback. 617-779-7937. We're talking about the Patriots and the recalibrated expectations for this football team. I believe Stiz now has that audio that Fitzy was talking about. Stephon Diggs. Can the Patriots be trusted? Will the Patriots have a letdown? What does the guy who brings the juice to the team have to say about it?
I think it's super important that we flip the page, considering New Orleans Saints is a really good football team. I know the record might not show it, but they're very skillful up front and in the back end. And to be honest, it might be a bigger test than last week, just as far as like having success and being able to replicate that process, or you know, do it all over again, and you know, work equally as hard and attention to detail and focus. Because this opponent, I know their record doesn't say it, but that's a good football team, and they've been in one score games plenty of times, and I don't expect it to be no different. We got to go in there with the right mindset.
He continues to
impress,
succeed everywhere except social media. If I ignore social media existing and any photos, videos,
that's,
allegations,
that's really hard to do. In
just ignore social media. Stephon Diggs is a hell of a patriot, hell of a teammate, hell of a leader, hell of a player. He's bringing everything to the table that you could ask for and more.
Scorching take inquiry coming in 3, 2, 1. Is Stephon Diggs the leader and face of this team?
Right now, he feels like the leader. He definitely, well, are we eliminating Vrabel or is he in contention?
I think Vrabel. I'm hearing more from Diggs than I am from Vrabel now, and I see more Diggs. Andy,
Stephon Diggs is a better leader
Andy,
than Mike Vrabel?
Hot
take, Fitzy.
In three clips, the pregame interview with Melissa Stark, the on-field, we all we got, we all we need, and then the postgame locker room speech, in those three clips on Sunday, plus, oh, that incredible 10-catch, 146-yard effort, it feels to me like Steph Diggs grabbed the available face of franchise and leadership mantle and went running with it. And if that knee holds up, he's not going to let it go.
Yeah. The leadership here is, if there was a pause there, it's because I was being talked to in my ear and I'm not great at that. Like, I'm being told here.
We have some developing news that we were telling Andy about that we'll get to next.
Yes. The second segment of this show is going to be quite interesting.
Football related?
Football related, and we'll get to it. I'll tease it properly as we get there. But who's just to put a bow.
Some would say we're not talking about this.
Yeah, we're not talking about this.
Oh.
To put a bow
sex
on
tape?
To put a bow on the
nailed
thoughts. That, yes, Diz put a sex tape in the kitchen. It's yours free if you want to go pick it up.
Really?
That's what everybody's taking. He put them in real DVD cases, but there's 31 versions of Stiz Goes to Chelsea, whatever you want to call it.
And boy, are you going to be disappointed.
One night in Chelsea. One night in Chelsea with Stiz as the lead role.
Yeah.
I like it.
Boom.
Have you ever seen Stiz behind bars?
Nope. Don't want to. Also, don't want to see him naked or in the act of anything like that. I like him behind
like,
the glass.
Stiz, you are like
the
new Ernest. Like, we should just make a series of movies with you. Just like Stiz goes to summer camp. Stiz gets a job.
All right, coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we have some interesting commentary on Bill Belichick. Are they talking exit strategy at North Carolina? Ted Johnson said yesterday he might not make it through the season. Could it come to an end faster than that for the Tar Heels coach and former greatest football coach of all time, Bill Belichick chatter? More of it up next here on WEEI Afternoons. Remember, stick around 3:45 for Adam Schefter, and maybe most importantly, 5:30. Quiz with Stiz is back. You know the man. You know the game. It is the most popular part of our show at times. Quiz with Stiz, 5:30. But up next, another popular part of our show. It's Dan Ball and that beautiful voice with What's Trending.
The Christian Arcan Show. Weeknights starting at 6.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've talked to him the last couple of Wednesdays. Taylor Kiles of CLNS joining us here again on Jones and Keefe. Taylor, how are we doing this week?
Doing well. It's like we're going steady or something.
It kind of is. It's very, 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 very flattering that you would say such a thing. Speaking of flattery, Mike Vrabel has identified you, and we were talking about this earlier today, because Mike Vrabel seems like at least a gruff exterior. We saw some of the videos after the game. Maybe there's more friendliness there than I realize, but a gruff exterior anyway on Vrabel. He's highlighted your work a couple of different times this year. What's your reaction to Vrabel kind of singling that out?
Of course, I appreciate it, but honestly, I'm a very self-conscious person, so it kind of feels like when you were a kid and you had the magnifying glass on the ants. I didn't do this. There were some weird kids that did it, but it kind of feels like that. Like, it's nice, and I appreciate it, but I also kind of shrink in my seat a little bit. But, you know, I react very strangely to it. But, yes, it is very kind of him to, you know, show his version of some love.
Well, it's funny because we are the same way. We rarely get compliments, but when we do, we always wonder if the person's being sarcastic or what's the catch.
How dare you, Vrabel?
Honestly, after the first time, I just asked him a question about the run defense or the run game, and he was like, oh, we averaged 5 yards a carry, so I think we did all right. So I thought he was kind of ribbing me a little bit, but then it kind of grew its own leg. But, yeah, you know, it's funny, and it's all work, you know. It's I don't know. See, I'm already freaking out. Let's do football stuff.
Let's just move on altogether. But the game on Sunday, a great game, obviously, by the Patriots, and a fourth quarter game-winning drive by Drake May, and he had been putting together a really good start to the season, but kind of taking it to the next level on Sunday night, specifically in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, man. The maturity that we've seen from this 23-year-old in his second year, especially in this Josh McDaniels offense, is pretty outstanding. Now, I will say, I thought that the way that Drake plays football, where I saw it on his UNC tape, and I even asked him last year, like, how do you read defenses? Are you looking at, you know, are you trying to say with this coverage, are you looking at space? And he's like, yeah, for him, it's space and leverage, which is exactly what Josh McDaniels' offense is designed to exploit. That's why you have all the route adjustments. That's why some people think it's complicated, because it's designed to basically beat any kind of coverage you're getting. So obviously in the summer, you know, there were some hiccups. I was kind of wondering how long it would take for them to really mesh. But over the past 2-3 weeks, I think we've really seen that. And last night, not only did we see the growth in the offense, but also his ability to drive down the field in a critical moment at the end of the half. Not once, but twice. Remember, he did it at the end of the first half, and obviously to win the game with some insane throws. So that was one of the bigger question marks maybe I had so far with Drake May's game. Can he get that staple comeback drive? And he did it, and I really think Patriots fans, you know, I'm kind of hesitant sometimes to get excited about this kind of thing, but Patriots fans should be excited. They really did get a good one.
You're very thorough in your breakdown of the team. People can check it out at tkyles39 on Twitter. Again, Taylor Kyles from CLNS joining us here on WEEI. What have you seen progression-wise? Because I think we saw a different Steph Diggs on Sunday night in his return to Buffalo. What have you seen progression-wise and how the Patriots have used Steph Diggs more and more, the different ways they've used him over these last 5 weeks, last month plus?
Funny thing is, he's still been part of a rotation because they like to get Mac Collins involved. They like to get Booty involved. Tyo Williams was even involved. Honestly, he was on the field for a few of Stephon Diggs' big catches. But I think the growth has been, one, the chemistry with Drake May, for him to feel comfortable going to Stephon Diggs when things break down. And Diggs, I mean, this is a guy who played with Josh Allen for years. And you can see that in how quickly, like on that deep scramble completion, his ability to quickly identify that he needed to get upfield, put a move on the defender, and then exploit space, and obviously making a couple of really impressive catches along the sideline. Just that veteran savvy that he's got. But I feel like the biggest progression that I've seen from Stephon Diggs is the yards after catch. The Patriots, really outside of DeMario Douglas and the running backs, don't have any yak eyes. And the fact that Stephon Diggs was able to put moves on guys, kind of shake free, and turn short completions into not just first downs, but even some explosive gains, that's huge, because that takes pressure off of Drake May and the rest of the offense, you know, because obviously Drake can sling it downfield with the best of them. But you'd also like for him to be able to throw a stick, you know, 3 or 4 yards downfield and then have that turn into like a 15-yard gain. So obviously their chemistry is building. We saw that last week with the back shoulder, which was something that they had kind of struggled with in the summer, and I was wondering when they were going to find some rhythm there. But I think the usage is pretty similar to what it's been. You know, also coming off the ACL, I don't know if they want to have him out there for like 80% of snaps necessarily. But what they're doing right now is working, and it's been fun to watch, obviously.
What do you do with the running back position going forward? Obviously, Antonio Gibson now out for the season with a torn ACL. Ramondre Stevenson had yet another fumble. And Trayvon Henderson hasn't looked as explosive as he did back in the preseason. So, you know, this week and going forward, what would you do in the backfield?
I think with the Ramondre Stevenson fumble situation, you gotta take it as it goes. Because at this point, it's almost like a quarterback situation where, like, yeah, if a quarterback throws, you know, Drake throws three interceptions, you're not going to bench him, but you're going to have a stern talk to him and be like, hey, dude, this can't happen. You know, this cannot be a regular thing. Unfortunately, with Ramondre, we know that it is. But it was one thing when you at least had Antonio Gibson, who we saw, he went in the game and really had some of the best runs that they had all night and really started getting things going. But with his very unfortunate injury, I don't know that you really can do much. But unless Ramondre fumbles like he did the other week twice in one game, then, yeah, you maybe have to take a snap swing and rely on Travion Henderson. But you're in a really tough spot right now where Travion, I think he still looks explosive, but I think the game is very fast for him right now, as I've already mentioned. That's still the case. In pass protection, you still can't rely on him consistently, which impacts his ability to see the field, even though they're still using him a decent amount. Like, they have a bunch of two running back packages where they try to push the ball downfield, and they'll have Mondre and then Travion in the backfield to help out the tackle. So he's been pretty good at that, but the pass pro is shoddy. So maybe you sign somebody off the street, but that's going to be someone who's new to the offense, who's going to have to learn the protections themselves, who has to get a feel for the offensive line. So that's not really an ideal situation either. And frankly, Ramondre is still their best running back, and it's not particularly close. So it's a really tough position that they're in, but I think it's still going to be Ramondre as that bell cow. And just by default, I think we are going to see more of Travion Henderson. Hopefully, with the increased reps and experience, that'll help him maybe acclimate to the game a little bit faster.
You mentioned the running backs, or Keith asked you about the running backs. I'm looking at your report card. Running back was a C-, safety was a C+. Also in there, the O-line checked in at a C+. I saw a tweet. You highlighted Will Campbell and Jared Wilson. You said it wasn't perfect, but it was good enough. What did you see out of the offensive line on Sunday night, and how do you feel about the direction they're heading on the O-line?
I thought the pass pro was pretty impressive, to be honest. Now, there were some losses, like the whole shot that Drake May made to Kayshon Boutte towards the end of the game when he got hit. That was one of the few times that a twist actually worked against that rookie left side. Jared Wilson was slow to pick a guy up, and then Drake May gets hit. But for the most part, I really thought they were impressive. There were a couple plays where the Bills used what's called a coffee house blitz, where you kind of pretend like you're going to drop or you're going to go somewhere else, and once that guy moves on thinking you're going to leave, you end up going right to that same gap. It's very hard to defend. I'm actually going to ask the offensive lineman today, what the hell are you supposed to do against that? They got beat on that, but that's a really tough thing that you don't see very often. But other than that, man, Jared Wilson is a tough dude to beat one-on-one. Sometimes, you know, as a rookie, you'll make some mental mistakes, but his ability to recover, to just lock guys up, so many times you'd see him really get his hands on somebody, and they just didn't really move. And that was something you saw in his college tape that's absolutely translated. In those one-on-one situations, I think he's gotten significantly more comfortable. Also, you know, with the stunts and the blitzes and things, but still a few hiccups. And then Will Campbell, his work against Joey Bosa was very impressive. There was one rep where Bosa actually beat him initially, and then Will Campbell showed why he was the fourth overall pick, because his ability to get back into position, the flexibility, and the quick feet where, you know, some guys who are heavier, it's hard for them to get back into position, whereas Will, very, very athletic guy, where, yeah, you can win initially, but you have to beat him clean for you to actually get to the quarterback. I saw him make a couple nice recoveries, and that's the biggest thing for these rookie offensive linemen. You're going to get beat, but can you recover? So I was very encouraged by their pass pro. Really generally the offensive line. There were some hiccups on the right side as well against the stunt, but I thought they were solid. I'm more worried about the run game. I'm starting to think that, you know, it's just going to have to be a to be determined on whether or not they're going to be a consistent ground attack, because that's where I think the rookie left side hurts you the most, because it's hard to know when there's post-snap movement, how you respond to that consistently. Different teams do different things and throw certain stuff at you. And also, I think that Mike Nwenu, he's been improving, he's been inconsistent. And Garrett Bradbury, while he's impressed me in pass pro, has, you know, been very boom or bust as a run blocker. And I'm just not sure how long that's going to take to fix. I've been talking about it for a few weeks, but I feel like I'm banging my head against a wall, and I don't see a lot of significant improvement. It's more just like baby steps each week. So the pass pro is awesome. It's a big reason I think that Drake May has been successful. But the run game, I really don't know how much you can rely on it to be consistently effective.
You know, the defense has looked a lot better the last 2 weeks. Is that simply getting Christian Gonzalez back, or is there something else jumping out at you?
I think Christian Gonzalez is a big part of it, because a lot of the big plays they were giving up before he got back in the lineup was to Alex Austin, who was basically trying to replace him and was often put in some very difficult situations. I also think that Robert Spillane has been much more consistent. I thought all of the linebackers were actually very good against the Bills, which I was honestly afraid of because Jack Gibbons isn't the most athletic guy, but he's very instinctive. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I actually had one play on the flea flicker. I don't know how he even made that competitive because the dude bit fully on the run and then turned his back, caught up to Curtis Samuel and got his hand in there. That was pretty remarkable. Jelani Tavai in his first game back looked like the Jelani Tavai that I think we expected him to be last year and that he had been in the last couple years of Belichick. That's a big part of it. And obviously this pass rush, man, Christian Barmore, man, he's getting closer to that 2023 form. I'm telling you, they were holding him. They were dragging him to the ground. They didn't know what the hell to do with Christian Barmore. He was dominant against the pass, had a couple of nice reps against the run as well. And he even freed up Milton Williams at times. And just all the depth they have on that defensive front of just quality veterans and the twists that they run sometimes. There's been a few times that Milton Williams, as much as he's paid and as effective as he is on his own, has really gotten sacked because of the guys around him. So it all starts with that defensive front where they poured all their money, but it also helps when the linebackers are consistent and they're, you know, keying their gaps and making all the right decisions. And then you've got one of the best cornerback groups in the league. Also, shout out Marcus Jones for making a lot of plays on Sunday. So, I mean, this is a good defense. It may not have a ton of names that people are familiar with, but I think there's a lot of quality players on that, especially in the front, but on the back end as well.
Taylor Kyle, CLNS, joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Next four, Taylor, at New Orleans this weekend, at Tennessee, home against Cleveland, home against Atlanta. That leads into Tampa Bay on November 9th. These next four, what's your expectation? How many do they have to win?
I think they've got to win. Tampa's tough. Tampa's a team where lose.
I'm sorry. Maybe I asked that poorly. Take Tampa out of it. These next four, New Orleans, Tennessee, Cleveland, Atlanta, next month. How many do they have to win out of those four?
Okay, thank goodness. Yeah, the rest of those, you got to win those games, I think. I know it's tough. You're going to be on the road a lot. That's never easy. And you also just came off a Bills game that was probably very emotionally draining in a good way, but that's a primetime spot in a hostile environment. So I think this week against the Saints especially is going to be its own test where, you know, wow, the Patriots have trap games again, where you just came off a big win. Can you stay locked in? And then I think they really should. The Saints have some good players, but I think this should be a pretty convincing win for them if they play even better version of what they did in Buffalo, because we know there were still some things that they had to clean up. But, yeah, I think this is a slate of games where they should be able to clean house and continue to build some confidence, you know, advance whatever they want to do schematically, and just get more chemistry within the group, because these are just not very good teams. These were teams I didn't think were going to be very good, and they've been worse than I expected. And that was why, at the beginning of the season, I said 13 winnable games. People thought I was crazy, but I just didn't see a lot of intimidating teams on their schedule, considering you've got Mike Vrabel, who's been a coach of the year. You have Drake May, who's a budding young star. And you have Josh McDaniels, who I think is like one of the top three or five offensive coordinators and play callers in the NFL. So when you have that combination and a defense that's playing well, an offensive line that's kind of exceeding expectations, honestly, an offense period, I think that's exceeding expectations. Yeah, you know, you never want to sleep on any team because the NFL is the NFL. But if they continue to improve, they absolutely should win out.
All right, through 5 weeks, who's the best team in the AFC?
Is it the Colts?
I mean, maybe.
I'm not watching a whole lot of other teams, to be honest. Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, it's got to be the Colts, right? Which is crazy to say.
I know. It is crazy. I mean, it's just
so
tough.
Indy's 4-1.
Well, they're 4-1.
Buffalo's
4-1.
Jacksonville is 4-1. Yeah, I don't know that I feel strongly about any of those
teams.
They
haven't played great teams, but they've blown out a bunch of teams. The Colts. Like, they haven't.
Okay.
They've beaten the Dolphins, Broncos, who are good, Titans, and Raiders. And then they lost to the Rams. But, I mean, they are 4-1. I mean, the Jaguars are 4-1. I think it might still be the Bills, honestly. Like, yeah. I know they lost that one, but if I had to like project going forward as well as what they've done so far, and that's why the win for the Patriots is so good, because I think they did beat the best team in the conference.
Oh, yeah, especially if they get Ed Oliver back. That's going to be huge, because I think that game also would have gone differently if they had had their best defensive player. But yeah, I was thinking more record-wise, just how crazy it is that so many of the teams at the top of the AFC are teams that you weren't even thinking of even sniffing the playoffs, but Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. It is the Bills, especially if they get out a little bit healthier down the stretch.
Well, and it's wide open either way. If the Bills are the best team and you just beat them in primetime in Buffalo, AFC wide open. Taylor Kiles, check out his work, CLNS. Follow him on Twitter at TKiles39. Maybe hear Vrabel shout him out later today when you hear from Mike Vrabel at 1 o'clock. Taylor, we appreciate it. As always, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for the time, fellas.
All right, thank you.
Taylor Kiles joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Good, thorough breakdown.
Rob Ninkovich is brought to you by Ketch's Law. Your attorneys, your neighbors. Ketch's Law has won over $3 billion for injured New Englanders. Learn more at ketcheslaw.com. You made it this morning.
Don't sue me for being late, Greg. I thought with your payroll and your salary, you could get me an escort somehow, like a police escort, to get me in here, because this morning it was basically fighting through floodwaters, trying to get here, a raging river going down 95. So I'm happy to be here. Sorry I'm a little bit late.
You're coming from the Foxborough area?
I'm coming from Walpole.
Walpole.
I dropped the kids.
That is the home of Cam. What's his last name, Courtney?
Schlittler.
Oh, thank
Schlittler.
You. Okay. Yes. And so driving a reasonable vehicle? Or
no, not
like
a reasonable. Oh, okay. Not reasonable at all. I'm in a 70 Buick Electra convertible, which
nice
was
car.
Leaking.
Soft top?
On the way here, soft top. Oh, and there's a few car. Leaks. So the reason I didn't have a car available is my wife told me I couldn't use hers. So use one of your old ones. Had to use the old one.
Okay.
So if you see a 70 Buick Electra driving down 95, that's me.
That's you.
Since
that's
you're me. Coming from Walpole every Wednesday now moving forward, can we do like a...
I might
put in
come
our,
earlier.
Put in an order from Muffin House.
Oh, yeah. I go right past them,
yeah,
honestly.
That is...
Muffin House?
Oh,
great
Greg.
Muffins.
Really?
Great
really
breakfast
good.
Sandwiches.
Really good breakfast. They do sourdough. Not a lot of places do sourdough.
Yeah.
It's better for you.
I
just like your thing of blueberries right there, Greg.
Well, you know, blueberries and...
Getting that low cholesterol.
I had a bite of my mush and it didn't taste right. And I looked at the expiration date.
Mush. Expired?
Every time.
4/20/25.
That
ew,
desk in front
Greg.
Of you is the...
So, Lord knows what'll happen.
Everything
with
in
that
front
baby.
Of you is the epitome of health right there.
Blueberries?
Yes.
So listen.
Except it's not working.
Yes.
Let's talk about Sunday night.
Let's talk about it. I'm ready.
On the brightest and biggest of stages, and that Patriots win, is this team for real?
They look really good. I'm not going to say they're back and they're going to the Super Bowl, but I think from where they were, they're learning and they're getting better, and that's really what you want. You want to see a progression from week to week of getting better. Granted, there is a few penalties. I mean, they need to clean up some of the penalties. If you look at the amount of penalties, the yardage there, the hidden yardage and penalties, that can get you in a close game. But if you look at Buffalo, they had a lot of the same mistakes as well. So I think they looked really good. Drake May looked amazing, threw the ball amazing. He was able to get out of the pocket, use his legs, look downfield. You know, a lot of young quarterbacks, when they have to get out of the pocket, they start to look at the rush instead of keeping their eyes downfield. And for him to be able to evaluate the field, Diggs had an amazing game. I mean, he wanted a payback game, and that was a payback game. You could tell in the pregame warm-ups the guy was juiced up and ready to go.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was a great game. I think they played well. Now, I think the biggest challenge, and Wiggy, you know this, is going to go from the emotions and getting yourself ready to go play a Sunday night game on the road in the division, keeping that same juice going on the road to play New Orleans, which they should destroy New Orleans. But this is one of them, you know, this is one of them games where you can get caught. So keeping the same energy and keeping that same mentality going on the road for a non-divisional game now, I want to see what that looks like.
What is the primary difference between this season and last? Rex Ryan, we listened to Rex Ryan yesterday on the show say it's all Mike Vrabel. Like, from your perspective, it might be the development of Drake May. Like, what in your mind, what's the primary difference?
I think it's a combination of things. They spent $365 million in free agency. That helps, right? So bringing in new guys, drafting, you know, I think Campbell's having a terrific season for a rookie. He's got the juice. So you see that guy, he always seems to be a young leader. I think Diggs, watching him, he seems like to be that veteran leader, getting everyone going. You know, the pregame speech, the in-game motivation, after the game. And Vrabel's doing a terrific job. So I think it's a combination. I think bringing McDaniels, Josh, in for Drake has probably been the biggest thing offensively and moving forward to where this whole organization could kind of get back to where they're winning ways. Now,
Shime, any comment?
Uh-oh, Shime? What does Shime think?
Shime hates Josh.
Why do you hate Josh?
He's terrible.
He's terrific.
He thinks he stinks.
I think his play calling is very inconsistent.
What is Drake May's percentage, completion
like
percentage?
70, how many times did he have to roll out of the pocket and make a play and improvise with Steph Diggs? Yes, on Sunday.
I mean, improvise, that's football. It's the whole
exactly.
game
that's
of
not
improvising.
Josh, but that's my point. That's not Josh McDaniels' play calling. That's a great job by the receiver to find a spot and the quarterback to find him and make a play.
Yeah, but the offensive coordinator puts the receiver in the spot to make a play.
He
also thought Josh McDaniels was telling Drake not to run.
Well, I would tell Drake not to run, considering if you watch this season, he has been taking care of himself better than he was last year.
Of course, but in the beginning, he was a bit nervous, it seemed, because...
I mean, look, I'd be nervous, too. I wouldn't want to see my quarterback get smacked.
Yeah. Nick, you would know this, not like you had a job waiting or anything, but when Gerard Mayo built his staff in that 1 year, did he do it with the expectation that it would look much different and more of his liking in subsequent years?
I don't understand that question.
So my question would be, why didn't Mayo bring in a guy like McDaniels? Why did he bring in a guy like Van Pelt?
Well, maybe he wasn't available or available to bring in at the time. And I think every single year, there's timing aspects of it too, because you try to get your staff in line year or two before and say, listen, I might have this job that's coming up next year. Would you be open to moving your whole family back to wherever? Would you be open to taking this job? And we all thought Bill was going to have that job one more year, correct? I didn't think Bill was going to get fired at, but then that happened. So then Mayo was available. And then Mayo was probably, hey, I got to get a whole coaching staff together a year before or 2 years, and I wasn't ready. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of timing factors right. when it comes.
And Alex, can you help me out on the offensive side? And Alex says, Elliot Wolf, and then Elliot Wolf says, oh, yeah, I worked with Alex Van Pelt.
Exactly.
Maybe he could be somebody good for you. And
it's all contracts, too. So you have to. It's not just the timing of, hey, will you be available next year? It's, hey, I have a 2 to 3 year contract that I'm working for somebody. Maybe I can get out. Maybe I can't get out. Maybe they'll let me out. Maybe they won't let me out. So there's all these different factors that go into hiring your coaching staff.
You know the organization better than anybody other than Wiggy probably in the room. Is there a chance that they add significantly to this team?
I would assume
November?
They're always looking for talent.
They always say that. Mike Vrabel always says
that. I think, you do look for talent, but then you have to look at what you're giving up for talent. So are we going and getting somebody that we feel can help the team win right now versus giving up a draft pick that we potentially could have a future with somebody who's in the second or third round? So I think it depends on the talent level.
But when you win a game like that, like a signature game like Sunday night, does that change strategy-wise internally? Do you then change and go, all right, we need to we need to win right now. Like we have an opportunity here in the AFC.
I think you stay with your building mentality of we're taking this organization that was really bad and we're bringing in our type of guys and we're looking for our type of guys who are trying to flip what was into what will be. So right now, if you look at last year's captains to this year's captains, they've replaced everybody. You know, the whole team has flipped over. The coaching staff, everything is turned over. So when you're looking for, I don't know, a receiver that might play for the Eagles, I would be interested in that because there is a relationship there, number one, with Vrabel. So that goes to the whole, hey, I know this guy, I know his character. And then on the flip side of it, it's AJ, right?
Yeah, AJ Brown.
AJ Brown, didn't he say he wanted to be a Patriot? In the draft process, he was crying.
He said he wanted
to be a Patriot. So there's also a connection there. So I personally would love to see that move. But then on the flip side of it, you have a team that's like, all right, give us a first, give us a second, you know, which doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that it's going to be critical these next 4 weeks because the next 4 weeks, after the Atlanta game, you'll look at that and you'll go, okay, where are we? Because then the trade deadline is a couple days later. So I think those 4 weeks, if you win your next four games, you might be more in the line of saying, all right, we got a couple days. Let's get somebody that can really help us.
There's also specific positions that you can go and get that aren't really that hard to learn. So, for example, if you're Joe Flacco and you just go to Cincinnati, you're literally having to walk in the building. Now, he's a veteran. He knows offenses, and he could probably get it quickly, but he's still having to relearn a verbiage.
Right.
And do that as fast as possible versus you go get a running back or a pass rusher or a receiver and say, hey, run a go route.
Right.
And you look at the guy and say, just run a go. It doesn't matter the verbiage.
Right.
You know, defensive end. Hey, just get the quarterback.
Right.
All right, cool. I can do that.
What do you do with somebody like Ramondre right now? The fumbling continues to be an issue, and now you've got Gibson out.
I think you got to keep giving him the ball.
Right.
And, you know, hope that he doesn't have another one. And, you know, another part of football is your confidence. You know, when you start to lose confidence, but then also lose the confidence of your coaches and the guys around you. Now, it is your fault because you're fumbling, but on the flip side of it, you know, you can get past those things. And if you start, you know, gaining your confidence back and holding the ball and running the ball well, you can go on a run here. So hopefully they continue to use him.
But isn't it time for them to say, because I think his confidence is completely gone.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, for him mentally, even though they keep giving him an opportunity, I just think he's like in that place where it's like, oh my God, he's always
thinking about it.
Right. Yeah. Where I think like now it's time for them to say, all right, well, Travion Henderson, we drafted him in the second round. He's going to be our lead back. We're going to throw you in there, Ramondre, and you don't have to worry about carrying the load as much because, you know, I've never been in that position, but as somebody who catches the football, once your confidence, it's gone. It's harder on the defensive side because you don't really have to focus on catching a football, holding on to it. I just think Ramondre's is gone.
Well, I think about as a long snapper, you know, I've been in positions mm-hmm. where you make a bad snap. And then you're thinking about the next snap.
Right.
So in your head, you know you can do it because you're repeating it in practice and you're doing it over and over and over again. But the second you get back on the field, you're like in the back of your head.
That's all you're thinking about.
I hope I don't mess this up. Yep. You know, I hope I don't throw this over the guy's head because then it's my fault.
You drop a football, it's the same thing.
It's the like, same thing. God. And you start thinking about it and dwelling on it. And you do it in practice. You're like, oh, this is easy. But the second you step on the game field, it's almost like you have a flashback. Bang, I'm
because
here,
if
I gotta
you look
do
at
it.
The hit that he took in the game, it wasn't like a punch
got hit
out.
Him with the elbow.
Yeah,
he
it was just like a regular
it.
Tackle.
He
that
wasn't
you,
trying to get the ball. Yeah.
And so that's why I think when I watch him, I think that it's just now in his head because of all the fumbles. And sometimes it's hard for those guys to come back, like to really get to the point. I seen it with guys who had the dropsies. Like, all right, they never get back.
But with Ramondre, it's not even just this season. He had this issue last season and with Bill. Like, Bill benched him.
So he's still thinking about that. That's my point. He might never come back from this.
Yeah.
He might just have the fumbleitis for the rest of his career where there are some guys who never were able to flip that switch and change. And now if you have that as a coach, you got to be like, oh, man.
Yeah, Ken says you got to wear a mask to prevent spreading fumbleitis.
Put like, the sticky traps. You know those mouse sticky traps? Put a couple of them on his forearm.
Do something.
That ball stick.
But when Vrabel's asked about it, he's very, like, he kind of takes the blame off Ramondre a lot. It seems like he protects Ramondre when he talks to people about it.
As a coach, it's a balancing act of how much do I put on the player, how much do I put on everybody else, myself, the coaching staff, you know. It's always a balancing act trying to give – you don't want the guy to flip on any radio or the TV and say, you know, head coach blames running back for trouble, right? So you're trying to figure out the best way to say we still have confidence in the player because we need the player. You know, you can't just say, all right, you've been fumbling. You're on the bench. You're not playing anymore because at the end of the day, the offense needs him. So you just got to continue to maybe – mix in the reps, mix in the type of plays. Hey, we're in the low red. Hey, we're on the one. We need you. Let's go. Punch it in. And, you know, that's how you regain the confidence.
We were talking earlier. We've been talking for a couple of days about the AFC and who you're worried about parity, about do you feel like it's wide open?
I feel like right now the NFL in general is sloppy. You know, there's a lot of sloppy football. You watch these games and there's so many penalties and Field goals used to be money. Every field goal block in general, you go back in the 10 years ago, there wasn't blocked field goals like there is this year, right? You see all these field goals that are getting blocked, and you're like, what's going on? And it comes down to going way back to the fundamentals and learning things through college, and you get to the pros, and you're continuing to be coached and taught and learn how to do things to where special teams used to be like, hey, there's not a hiccup here. This is just the way the game is. And now you see a lot of hiccups in a lot of areas that you start to say the better coached teams, the more disciplined teams are going to be able to win these games. Because at the end of the game, when you need to kick a field goal and win it, which, you know, hey, I had my fingers crossed. The rookie came through. He kicked the ball. It was through the uprights. Great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think back on some PATs that they're supposed to be there, and they were gone. They weren't there. So, you know, I think right now it's wide open. And the next month, the next 4 weeks of this season, we're going to see a lot of teams either getting better or staying the same. And if you are a team that can improve and get better, you're going to be able to beat the teams that stay the same.
I just think nowadays, like, even in the NFC, there's no – when you played, I felt like New England was always – dominant. They were just so much better than everybody else, and there's no dominant team. Like, you know, I watched the Philly game, and there's a couple games that they win, like you said, on a block field goal, or they scoop and score, but there's no team that you go, man, you got to be on your A game to beat that team. And that's why I give New England, that's why in my eyes, I look at, if New England consistently play like this, they can easily make a deep run.
I think as far as these massive swings, you look at the Panthers, they beat Atlanta 30-0,
right?
Came here, and they didn't even look like they wanted to be on the football field. They were walking into the huddle or into the tunnel at halftime, literally walking, every single one of them walking. Well, maybe one or two because I filmed it. But I'm like, they don't want to be here.
Right.
And then they got destroyed, right? So it's so weird how they have these massive swings, and that's what I was talking about. In division, non-division game. Because Atlanta, in division, they're jacked up. We got to win this team. We got to beat this team. We got to win against this team. And then the next week, they're on the road. Team they don't really know. Eh, who cares? We're still getting paid. Let's get the, you know, break speed off us.
And that's your concern about Sunday.
My concern about Sunday is the momentum and the energy in a Sunday night game. And we got a big one coming. And then you go on the road with a non-division team that really is kind of, because they're not a good team either.
Right, but don't you think Vrabel gives them a little bit of
juice?
Of juice in the sense not to fall into that.
Of course. He's telling them all week, I guarantee, he's saying it. Listen, we're going on the road. We don't know these guys. We got to prepare this week, just like last week. Let's build this momentum. Let's go on a run here. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that it's also been the mentality of the players. And we're seeing a shift in the mentality of the players from what it used to be to this kind of not as violent. You know, like before you'd go into pregame, if we were playing the Ravens or the Steelers, there were almost like security people in between the two teams because they wanted to fight each other, like literally. Now they're like, hey, let's have dinner tomorrow. Great. Yeah. You know, good to see you. Let's swap jerseys after the game. Like, we're buddies. Yeah, we trained
like all the
we trained in Arizona
all the
together.
Old guys say that.
It's
well,
crazy.
Even Vrabel said it, though. Remember when Vrabel, when I remember there were guys that policed the locker room, guys like Willie Mack, Lawyer Malloy, these guys policed the locker room. So you
what
had
was
to be
that for you guys?
I mean, I think we didn't really have that
butler
enforcer. No, I mean, I'm thinking back to the teams that we played on defensively, like Vince didn't mess around. Like, so I would say Vince was quiet, but he'd be like, no, we ain't doing that. Like, let's go. Yeah. You know, we ain't doing that. Like, we ain't going over there talking, having a good time with these guys. Let's
He policed the locker room. You had to worry about Vince. Like, if I said something slick, like Vince is going to be like, so that's my, but even Vrabel said this to the other, to us the other day, I'm trying to find somebody to beat. But like you said, their personalities
aren't as, like, you know, think about the Steelers. They had Joey Porter in warmups would have his shirt off flexing, like trying to intimidate people, which I'd laugh at. I'm like, dude, go over there. What are you doing? It was probably
Juju Smith-Schuster doing the TikTok pregame for the Steelers that changed that.
I can do that to get everybody fired up for the show.
The Ravens.
Take my shirt off and give us
the Steph Diggs speech pregame.
All right. We can take a break. Rob Ninkovich is here, and Rob Ninkovich is brought to you by Ketch's Law. Your attorneys, your neighbors. Learn more at ketcheslaw.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Expectations now changing for everybody?
They could, and they almost should, in a vacuum, be 10-3. By the time they get to their bye.
Back here at WEEI Afternoons, it is a Thursday afternoon at 3:30. That means we talk to our buddy Tommy Curran that you heard right there. Tom Curran is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair, and by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tom, what'd you think of Stiz playing the homer horn for you at 10-3?
Oh, that homer. We know that Stiz. Oh, that Stiz. That's the edgy afternoon show coming at you.
But that, you know, we all saw what we saw on Sunday night in Buffalo.
Right.
And then we all see what we see on the schedule. And it's hard not to get ahead of yourself. The one question I have, do you trust this team? Because it's one thing to get all hot and bothered and lathered to go to Buffalo and get the upset. Now you got to beat teams you're supposed to beat, and that means don't turn it over, don't have any penalties, don't do dumb things. Do you trust the Patriots in the spot they're in moving forward?
No, and that's why the all-important three-word caveat in there was in a vacuum. No injuries, no stupidity, play like you're capable of, and you should be 10-3. You're going to be favored in every game, I think, except for the Tampa Bay game in about 3 or 4 weeks. So in a vacuum, they could and should be 10-3. But no, I mean, they're not that far removed. Look, they've had a terrific game against Carolina and did what they should do against a lesser team. That's, let's see, 2 out of 4 games in which they did what they should do against what we perceive to be a lesser team. And then they overperformed. Yeah. Well, they played better than I expected against the Bills, okay? So you've got 5 games, and 2 have been underperformances, and 3 have been adequate or overperformances. So I don't think it's out of their system, as we talked about last week a little bit, when I said there's still a dark side. But you do have to say that you can't confiscate what they accomplished. You can't say they didn't do it. You can't say I'm not sure they can do it. You can't say I've never seen them do it, because you did see them do it. So it does change the geometry a little. If you can see Drake May play a game that responsibly and that well on the road with no wild throws that are inexplicable, with no heat on him, then, okay, he set a precedent. So you can not necessarily expect it week in and week out, but you know he's capable.
Hey, Tom, 3-2, this team, it feels like everybody is just loving up on the Patriots, but they still have some issues. What's the biggest concern you still see in this team and have for this team moving forward?
It's depth, Teddy, and I know you guys discussed it a little bit, talking about places where you would add. I'm not to that point where, you know, I want to say, how about this guy for that draft pick? But one injury of running back, and it has reshuffled that group of three from being one of the more impressive and deep groups on the team to now, because of one player's inability to hold on to the ball consistently, now it's a massive question mark and causes sweaty palms. You mentioned, I think, Teddy tackle. If you lose Morgan Moses or Will Campbell, now you're into your depth of tackle. Is Marcus Bryant capable of playing that position? Darian Lowe, those are question marks. Defensively, I think they're in a much better spot, and I think that they're playing. And I did anticipate that they would take a few weeks to gel, but I think they're playing really well now, and I think they have better depth over there. But offensively, I think the depth is a concern.
So, Tommy, I think that the Patriots should move in the running back market, and I know that there are a number of teams that have sustained starting running back injuries, so it's probably a pretty thin and competitive market as well. How do you feel about the possibly seeing somebody who would look good in a Patriots uniform this weekend, Alvin Kamara?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. It's just way early to put together a wish list and sit on Santa's lap and say, can I have one of these? Because it's, you know, New Orleans has lost three competitive games. In actually, you know, they were neck and neck with Buffalo. They lost by five, I think, to the Niners. I just don't think teams right now, 5 weeks in, are sitting there saying, boy, how can we get worse? How can we start planning for next year? And I think that, again, in a vacuum, we tend to look at, hey, what do the Patriots need? They can browse. Every other team is looking at itself and worried about itself and who they retain. So Kamara would be great. Sign me up. Great pass catcher. One of the most productive guys over the last decade or so. But I couldn't even entertain the idea of, like, what would you give up and what would you get for a player before Columbus Day? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just early. And don't ask me about A.J. Brown.
Okay, I wasn't going to. NBC Sports Boston's Tommy Curran here on WEEI Afternoons. What I did
was A.J. Browned out.
Oh, a little, well, until he arrives. If he arrives, then we won't be A.J. Browned out anymore. But until then, yes, I agree. I'd rather talk about the guy that's here and that's starting to look like a number one wide receiver. Stephon Diggs is a really interesting guy to me because I thought he might be on PUP. He wasn't. I thought there might be baggage. And while there's been some weird stuff on social media, basically everything he's done and said since he arrived has been the right thing. It's felt like a leader, and then he goes out and catches 10 balls to help you have your big upset. How impressed have you been, I guess, with Stephon Diggs? And where do you think this can go? Is he a legit Pro Bowl caliber number one wide receiver right now?
Yes. Statistically, if you add it up at the end of the year and say that he ends up with, you know, 87 catches for 1,200 yards. I don't even know if 87 catches cuts it anymore since guys end up around 110. But, yeah, he is a number one. And Drake May treats him as such, which I did not think that Diggs would be a guy who would come here. And even in Houston last year, he wasn't their number one. Nico Collins was. Here, there is no Nico Collins, so he does elevate. But I didn't think he would have a 12-target game. But he has been so trustworthy. It's obvious that even if he's covered, May has the confidence to put it in there and say, I'm going to take a risk with him rather than a throw to Pop Douglas. I'm going to find my way. And just even looking at that infinity sign reroute that he did for the 32-yard catch down the sideline, I don't know if other guys are as capable or if Drake May, while he's watching that go on, is going to have the same faith in Kayshon Booty or DeMario Douglas to not be thinking as it's going on and looking downfield with someone breathing down his neck. Where's he going? Does he know what he's doing? I think with Diggs, he knows. He goes, wherever he goes, I'm going to throw it because he's going to be in the right spot.
Yeah, no doubt, Tom. Look, I don't know if it's going to come back around to me, so I'm going to ask it now. I got to get your thoughts on what some people are saying is the biggest story in sports right now. That's Bill Belichick at UNC. Mm-hmm. You see what's going on down there. Your thoughts on Belichick at UNC.
I really resisted it, even as it was going south the last few weeks, thinking that it would impact his legacy in a major way. I thought it would be certainly mentioned, you know, say when he retires or even worse befalls him, that he finished his career at UNC. But I didn't think it would do any kind of damage or call into question his aptitude generally. And I think that this has been such an over-the-top, humiliating, disappointing, ego-driven disaster down there that it is causing more damage than I anticipated. And, you know, we used to say, is he going to finish the season? I'm like, come on. And, of course, he's going to finish the season. I can't imagine. I mean, how do you think Bill feels as we see the reports last night sitting there on the phone? Hello? Yeah, Bill Belichick here. Yeah, I'm sticking around. Can I have another number? I have to call another kid who's going to decommit here. I mean, he had to sit there on the phone last night, and he had to put out a statement. Do you think that Bill wanted to put out a statement? Or did North Carolina go to him and say, hey, you got to put out a statement here. This is bull. You got to do something here. Put something out. Bill's not going to do that unless it's at the point of a bayonet. So at his age and his accomplishment level, I can't imagine that he wants to be sitting on the phone at 8 o'clock in his kitchen calling a bunch of 17-year-olds telling them that, hey, everything's okay here.
I'm not sure they have his phone number, but yeah, point's well taken. Yeah.
No, he was calling them.
Oh, he was calling them. Gotcha.
He was calling recruits last night. That was a report that came out today. Bill was working the phones last night.
Interesting. Okay.
Calling recruits to assure them that things were fine here.
I didn't realize that. There. Okay.
Hey, Tom, just on the subject of Mike Vrabel, has the manner in which Vrabel has conducted himself this season, which seems to be working incredibly well, we talked to Adam Schefter a little bit about this yesterday as well, but did the manner in which he's conducting himself this season catch you off guard a little bit, or, you know, the outside the locker room, dapping up every single player after the win, being so encouraging, not being as much of a badass or a hard ass or like a tough guy? Like, did you see this manner in which he's conducting himself this year, which seems to be working so well? Did you see this coming?
Parts of it. Yeah. I think that he is a genuine guy in terms of, he does like to know people. He does like to engage with people. I experienced that as a player. Teddy, you saw it more closely than I did. I remember when he was in the locker room once, and I was in there too, and there was a young player, and I just heard a big voice behind me said, "Hey, I'm Mike Vrabel. I'm your NFLPA rep here. Just wanted to introduce myself." And that was to some, I don't even know who the player was, practice squad guy who was just walking through the locker room. And that's his personality. What has surprised me is just how forgiving he is for mistakes. And I wonder if, Teddy, we were talking about this the other night, I wonder if having sons who are of the age of a lot of his players has led him to be more understanding that, look, the way to get to Borregales right now isn't to put a parade of kickers past his locker. We drafted him. We're not going to cut him. The devil I know might be better than the devil I don't. So I'm going to stick by him. I'm going to reward him. And the same thing with Stevenson, perhaps. I can't imagine, as pissed off as the most loyal Patriots fan is, you can't look into Ramondre Stevenson's helmet on the sideline after one of those fumbles and not go, "That poor bastard." Because he looks like, you know, you just ran over his dog. You feel terrible for him. And I think that Mike is attuned to that. And I thought that he would be a little more Parcellian than he has been. So that has been a surprise to me. But the outward enthusiasm is not.
Tom, what do you got for Sunday? Do they screw this up or do they roll?
No, I think, you know, if you look at New Orleans, they're coming off a nice win too. They haven't been far away. Spencer Rattler has been mildly efficient. I think that the New Orleans defense creates turnovers, creates pressure. It's going to be loud, and I think it'll be a close game that the Patriots will escape with. But I don't think that they're totally out of the woods where you should say, hey, they should be winning by 10 here. And if they win on a last-minute field goal again this week, you're like, have the Patriots slipped? They're still trying to get their sea legs under them, I think. So I would imagine they win a close game down there.
I'll take it. For a team that won four games in each of the last 2 years,
exactly.
I'll take the fourth win in October. Tom, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
See you, Tommy.
That was NBC Sports Boston's Tom E. Curran. When we come back, and after I eat some smokehouse barbecue, we will talk about what Tom Curran said about the defense, and we'll have a note from the practice field on the defense. Dan Ball noted something that we'll have to delve into next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Hey, look, Keith, if Josh McDaniels says something, you better take it to the bank.
Oh, his word is strong as oak.
That's a trustworthy man.
Definitely.
When he says his kids aren't going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere.
I like Westwood.
Oh, yeah.
You take that to the bank.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I can't think of anybody.
No.
Whose word is bond.
Yeah.
More than Josh McDaniels.
It's like Kush's dad and Jerry Maguire. I don't need to sign anything. Just take my word for it.
We're five games in and this guy's already like the next hot head coaching candidate? Like, where was that a planted question? I think that was Callahan.
Had to be.
All due respect. I like Andrew Callahan.
Sure.
A lot. Was that a planted question?
I spit out my coffee when I heard that. I was like, Josh McDaniels is going to get a job somewhere else? Are we high on drugs and alcohol? This guy's a two-time failed head coach. He's not allowed in Denver or Vegas. They hate him so much.
Or Indianapolis, where he backed out of a job.
Indianapolis, yeah. Right? He's like, hey, I'll be your coach. I'm going to hire a whole staff, and then I'm going to quit. Staff's still there. Hope you guys take the staff on. I'm going to take the job verbally and then back out and quit. He's returned to, he's been here three times. Where's he going? That was one of the reasons why they hired him back, I think, was Robert Kraft said, at least we don't have to worry about losing our offensive coordinator every year. We'll have this guy. He was so bad as a head coach in two spots. And also, you can throw in offensive coordinator with the Rams. So the Rams have had him. The Broncos have had him. The Raiders have had him. The Colts wanted him, but he backed out, which actually worked out well for the Colts, I would say.
It did.
This is not, I don't want to bash McDaniels because I think he has done a good job so far. But after five games of Drake May looking pretty good, to think that he is going to be at the top of the line at the head coaching carousel is wild.
Wild.
Cliff Kingsbury, who I also don't think is a great head coach, was a more successful head coach than Josh McDaniels and had a more successful season as an offensive coordinator with a new quarterback last year with Jaden Daniels. And was he at the top of the list for everybody? Was he a head coach? Did he leave? Did he go somewhere else?
No, he's back.
No, no. So Josh McDaniels isn't going anywhere. And, you know, whether it was a planted question or not, I guess he was just being polite answering it. But, like, nobody's going to take him. I think he has a better chance of getting a job than Bill Belichick, but not by much.
No.
I feel like they're kind of in the same boat. McDaniels is in the right spot. How do we know? Because every time he's trying to do anything else, he's had to come back and do this job. This is the job that he does. He's good. He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine. He's fine to good. Maybe Drake May is great, and maybe they're going to have some success. But if you're another team right now, there's no way. And teams are dumb. I'll give you that. Teams are dumb. But do you think the New York Jets are sitting there with Aaron Glenn and it's a disaster? Or even the team they're playing this weekend, Saints, terrible team. Are they like, man, if we could pry Josh McDaniels away from New England, we'd be all set. That would be so dumb.
It would be dumb.
The Raiders threw a parade after they fired him. Every guy on the team was like doing champagne celebrations when they fired him. He is not a head coach, and that's fine. Not every coordinator in the NFL needs to be a head coach, and I think he's a great example of that.
I just, we're five games in. Has the offense even been good? I just did some of this, Keith, and if my math is wrong, then my math is wrong. I just went through and tried to count rankings real quick, but if somebody out there wants to fact check me, go ahead. In yards per game, this is the Josh McDaniels offense, which on Sunday night wasn't really an offense. Lou Riddick and all the other McDaniels mafia out there, it wasn't really an offense. It was just Drake May dropping back, backyard playground football, pulling plays out of his ass, which was singularly brilliant. I'm not knocking Drake May for this.
I would love to. He and Diggs, it was great.
Just what was McDaniels' offense exactly in the second half of that game? In the first half, they stunk. And in the second half, it was Drake May running around making plays. But in yards per game, they're 16th. Dead middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Passing yards per game, they're better. They're top 10, tied for 7th. 241.4.
I think it's been pretty good.
Rushing yards.
They haven't run the ball well.
They're 27th.
Low. That's a low.
Points per game, which I think counts some special teams touchdowns.
It's just all overall points.
13th.
I got them 12th. Okay. But either way, maybe it's a tie.
25 a game, whatever.
I don't know. But it does. Either way, no, I think it's been, it's arrow pointing up.
You're right. They're tied for 12th with Kansas City. My mistake.
Oh, that must be
so sorry. I knocked him a spot there. Tied for 12th.
No, but that's fine. But how many failed head coaches get a third go? I think a lot of them
five
get a second.
Five games in, they're a mediocre offense, and five games in, we're like, do you want to finish your career here, or are you gonna go somewhere else if you're a head coaching candidate?
Where's he going? Where's he going? Honestly, what team would take him? They're going to be like, well, you must have learned from Denver, St. Louis, and Vegas, right?
Also,
and when you backed out of a job.
I know Josh has done this before. His second go-round, before he got the Raiders job, there was a story.
Oh.
Who was the author? It was the exact same, almost word for word. It's like, well, I don't want to pick up my family and uproot them and move, and I love it here. You know what? I learned from Denver. Yeah,
all these coaches lie. It's part of the job.
Get out of my face.
It's fine.
So I don't think anybody would give him the job. But the idea, just the audacity of the idea that he's been here five games. Drake May is really good.
No, but like,
And you have a mediocre so-so offense, and now you're the next head coaching candidate?
You are not.
Get out of my face.
I just, find me an example of a guy that failed in two jobs. Not a guy that was like okay in two jobs or good in one, bad in another, and then found a third job. We always say, like, you know, that first job is important. You know, a lot of guys will take it even if it's a bad spot. And if you flame out, you might get a second chance. Unless you're so bad, right? Yeah. Like Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, they're not getting a second head coaching job. But like Josh McDaniels, like rehabilitated himself and then got a second job. And even then we're like, okay, like good luck, Vegas. And it didn't go well, and then he got fired in season. third time's a charm doesn't really work. That's not really a thing you've been as bad as you were twice.
Like, Pete Carroll's had three NFL jobs where he was, like, leaving, going, but Pete Carroll also was, you know.
Won a Super Bowl.
Won a Super Bowl in the
and
NFL.
And his in-between.
Was spectacular in college.
Was an unbelievable college coach and then won a Super Bowl with Seattle. So, no, that doesn't count.
No, I'm just trying to think of even guys who, like, were ping-ponging around and different. Like, plenty of guys have had multiple NFL jobs but never left the NFL. Pete Carroll went to college, came back, was pushed out in Seattle, out for a year, came back, got a job. Like, I don't know.
Even
guys
the guy Bill wouldn't count between the Browns and the Jets, would he? Because he didn't.
Jets doesn't count. Jets doesn't count. And even Bill with the Browns is so much better than McDaniels at either spot he was at.
100%.
Right?
100%.
So, I'm looking at all the head coaches right now, and really it's a lot of first time head coaches, or at least with their first team. They might be there for several years, but their first rip at it, like a Kyle Shanahan or like a Mike Tomlin.
Josh, I know there's going to be just an avalanche of offers for you.
There's not going to be any.
Are you going to finish your career with Drake May?
No.
In Westwood? Multiple people on the text line pointed out, by the way, Westwood, right downtown. Just like Cam Schlittler.
Yeah, and Schlittler.
I'm just right on the Boston Common, as multiple texters pointed
out. But I don't see him getting any offers, honestly. I guess the one thing maybe you could see is if Drake May has an awesome, awesome season, would there be somebody else that says, hey, could you convince yourself that he could be our offensive coordinator and get the most out of fill in the blank, like Cam Ward, or like, you know what I mean? Like somebody like that, or like Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
If it's maybe even that, I don't think it's happening.
Could you see him taking a college job? I mean, Bill got a college job. Do you think he could
many of them. I mean, Bill O'Brien got a college job.
Not that North Carolina would hire someone from the Belichick tree.
Yeah.
But if Bill can get North Carolina, could McDaniels get a head coaching college job?
I think he could.
Yeah, me too. But I think he could get. He's not getting an NFL.
But I don't know if he wants to. I feel like that opportunity probably would have already been out there for him. He probably could have done that even this year if he really wanted to. Because even if you're a bad NFL coach, there's only 32 jobs. There's 150 jobs.
Could he get a high-profile college? I bet you're right. I bet college jobs were available him this offseason.
He's not taking over, I don't think he's taking over, Penn State, which people are saying, that might be, the big marquee job that could be out there. But, a North Carolina equivalent? Sure.
But he probably already could have had that.
Yeah, if UMass called, or if he called UMass and was like, I'm interested, they'd hire him today, I bet. You have the NFL pedigree. It didn't go great, but I think there is some appeal to it. But does he really want to do that? Plus, he just watched Bill do a horrible job down there. Maybe he's like, all right, maybe it's not as easy as it looks.
He was just answering a question he was asked. What's the big deal? Yeah, a planted question is what I think.
I feel like the question was odd.
Yeah, 617. So you never know with the McDaniels Mafia. You legit never know. That could have been Josh asking himself for all I know.
What do you think Vrabel's reaction was to that? I would love to have heard it.
Good point.
Vrabel's hey, they just asked Josh if he's going to be a head coach again. He's where?
Vrabel's he'll be lucky if I ask him back next year. Yeah. I didn't even hire him in the first place.
Yeah, he's he might be available. Yeah, that is funny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.